And now for our bonus round. It's the most stressful season of all. Name it, Dave, for 300 points.
What is winter?
Oh, come on.
Correct answer. What is tax season? Sorry, Dave. Whoa, who are you?
I'm April from TaxAct, where we help you file for less and get more.
More for less?
Yep, so you can turn tax season into maximum refund season.
Well, there it is, folks. Tax season's a winner after all.
Switch to TaxAct today and start for free.
See TaxAct.com for details.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give Grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL plasma center and be rewarded for your generosity.
Hour number three of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Coming up 20 minutes from now, Kyle Draper will join us as we get you set for Kings Warriors, game number two. We saw how great of an atmosphere that was on Saturday night in Sacramento as the Kings do take the 1-0 series lead. We'll see if they could take a commanding 2-0 series lead tonight before that series does shift back over to the Bay Area. So Kyle Draper will be joining us, Kings play-by-play, pre and post as well, 20 minutes from now. We had the commissioner of the NHL, Gary Bettman, on earlier. Stanley Cup playoffs are back. After one period, the Hurricanes are leading over the Islanders, Sebastian Aho. They have two Sebastian Ahos in this series, one for the Islanders, one for the Hurricanes. No relation. The Hurricanes, Sebastian Aho, who a lot more people know, did get the goal, so they're up 1-0. The Bruins, they're 10 minutes in. We know the historical season the Bruins have had, most wins, most points in NHL history. And their stud, David Pastrnak, did get the first goal in this 1-0 affair. Later on tonight, we have the Wild and the Stars, and you have the Kings and the Oilers as well, with Connor McDavid, who's having this sensational season, 64 goals, 89 assists, 153 points, and it'll turn out to be what I would assume is the third ever unanimous MVP. I don't see you could vote anyone else. We talked about this a few weeks ago. Gretzky only won the unanimous MVP only somehow one time. McDavid did so during the COVID year, and he'll add a second unanimous MVP to his trophy mantle coming up very soon. So that's the hockey schedule tonight in the association. You do have the Sixers and the Nets. I guess here's good news if you're hoping that this will be a close series, and I don't think it will be, as the Sixers will win this in either four or five. I can't see this going past five games. At the end of one, it is 25-all, so we do have a competitive first quarter of game number two between the Nets and Sixers, and like I said, Warriors and Kings will come your way at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. But first up, let's update you on some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We call this segment the News Brief.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Game number two won't be until Wednesday, but Ja Morant's status is in doubt with a hand injury. So let's hear from LeBron James of the Lakers, who has a 1-0 series lead up against the Grizzlies after their 128-112 victory on Sunday, yesterday. Here is LeBron James saying he knew Austin Reeves was going to be a stud. Of course he did from day one.
I knew from the first practice that we had when we grabbed him that it wasn't going to be long. He wasn't going to be a two-way player for long. Then a couple weeks went by. I knew he was going to get a guaranteed contract at some point.
Hickey, we know LeBron has told many lies before. And I say this liking LeBron James. It's not me just dumping on LeBron to dump on LeBron. But there's no way, even with LeBron James's basketball acumen, that day one he was like, oh, yeah, this Austin Reeves fella, he's not going to be a two-way player for that long. He's going to get a guaranteed contract. He's not going to be going anywhere. Kid had a great game, 23 points, a 3 of 5 from 3, 8 of 13 from the field. But I feel like this is one of those moments where, yes, what else is LeBron going to say in that moment? You don't want to sound like a bad teammate. Oh, I thought this guy was going to suck the first time I met him, or just thought he was going to be a mediocre player. But this is just LeBron who, if there's an opportunity to hype up a story and make it seem as if he's the most clairvoyant person in the world, LeBron's going to take advantage of that opportunity.
I have no idea what pushes him or inspires him to make everything about himself. Why can't we just say Austin Reeves had a great game? We needed his fourth quarter in order to win the game. You could have said that. Most teammates say that. Instead, it's, well, you know, hey, from day one, I knew this guy was going to be going to guarantee contract. By the way, it's not even that big of an accomplishment to know. Oh, I knew he was going to be a two-way player. Great, LeBron. All right, congratulations. You identify this guy could stay on the roster. That's still not you predicting he's going to play great in a playoff game.
It's a nice way of LeBron saying and dressing it up of him preventing himself from saying what we wanted to say. Yeah, I knew he wasn't going to be a scrub from day one. Yeah. I thought there was a chance he'd be okay. Here is Ja Morant saying his hand injury could keep him out of the lineup moving forward.
Tough, man. Especially, you know, with everything I've been through pretty much, you know, this season. You know, my main focus was to, you know, be out there for my guys. Another, you know, incident where, you know, that's pretty much in, you know, jeopardy.
He sounds as dejected could be. Now, I know they lost. Clearly, he's hurt. But usually, you don't have players reveal much in those situations, especially when there's so much time until Wednesday when game number two happens. But Hickey, I would be shocked if he plays in game number two, or even if he plays in game number three, just by listening to that answer. That answer makes you think that he believes that he's probably going to be done for the rest of the series. Like, maybe slight chance he could come back from, you know, for a game seven. But that was as dejected as you'll hear a player when usually players don't reveal much in those circumstances.
The only hope for Grizzlies fans is that maybe he's wrapped up emotionally in the moment. And it's, again, not as bad. And we'll put that in kind of quotes and you can kind of leave that up for grabs and how you want to interpret it as it seems. But you're right. Hearing his voice, you don't have to watch the injury, see how he falls. Just hearing him talk makes it seem like it's very serious.
That wasn't nice what you just did.
What?
The guy has a hand injury and you go, oh, we'll put this in quotes. And you did the air quotes. You know, when you're making fun of his hand injury there?
He can, left hand. He can do one air quote with the left hand. That still works.
They do call you around these parts the bad boy of radio.
Gotta live up to it, right?
Ja Morant says he'll try his best to play in game two on Wednesday.
I'm going to do anything to, you know, try to be out there for my team, be out there on the floor. It's pretty much, you know, how much, you know, I can tolerate. I feel like, you know, I can go out there and, you know, be somewhat myself.
My only hope, if I'm a Grizzlies fan, for him playing in game number two, if he's trying to make this out to be worse than what it actually is, and you're trying to build up the storyline a little bit. But at that point, Hickey, like, that's the best that I have. I would be, once again, shocked if he's playing.
I was just going to ask, is he trying to make this like a Willis Reed situation where no one knows, all of a sudden, like, every ESPN camera's on the Grizzlies locker room? Oh, my God, Ja Morant's coming out. Maybe that's what he's trying to build it up to be.
Maybe you're right on that front. De'Aaron Fox says his teammates' belief in him is what led to his big game. He had 38 points.
In the fourth quarter and at the end of a game, like I said, we talk about this countless times. My teammates are confident in me to go out there and make plays for myself and others. So the least I can do is go out there and believe in myself.
So De'Aaron Fox has been a really good player since getting into the league. And the last 3 years, he's been sensational. But he hasn't got the national love. And this is the first time he's ever made an all-star team, which I was kind of shocked to read by as well. But it kind of shows you, when you're playing in Sacramento, the team has been such garbage for such a long time. Like, when we were growing up, Hickey, those were fun teams with Weber and Bibby and Peja Stojakovic, just to name a few. Like, that was a team when I had an NBA video game. And you ever do, like, those, you could do, like, street ball and you could play two-on-two? I would always pick Peja Stojakovic. I think he was paired with Mike Bibby. And you would just jack up threes with Stojakovic just with how good of a three-point shooter he was from the corner. But this team has had really no identity and no life. They had the longest playoff drought in sports, and they finally snapped this, and still everyone's going in basically saying that they don't have a shot or they don't have a team that get to the finals, and then De'Aaron Fox plays the way that he did. It's moments like that, for someone that's still young, it just shows you why making the playoffs are so important, because when you play in a regular season, but let's be real, the NBA regular season isn't this great talking point for most of the times in positive stories, because we're usually bitching about load management And there's just not that much care from players, it feels like, when we cover this night in and night out, and there's not that much attention to the regular season. And you get De'Aaron Fox in a big moment in the playoffs, and he delivers like that. It makes so many more people that usually will never throw flowers at De'Aaron Fox finally start to do so. I really want to see. I know the Warriors. I'll never pass up a chance to see more of the Warriors because of what they've done. But they just won a championship last year. I know I love watching Steph. I'm sure the league would much rather have the Warriors advance than the Sacramento Kings. But I kind of have a soft spot for this Sacramento team. And I want to see them go as far as they possibly can just because that atmosphere, Mike Brown also being another storyline as well, and you see the way that De'Aaron Fox can play, it's a very likable team. It's an easy team to root for.
They're fun. They're a fun group. They play no defense. The games are high scoring. They run up and down. It's a great watch, great team to root for. I'm with you. I hope they go far.
And I don't even think they played their best game yet. Sabonis basically did, I know he did well rebounding, but from an offensive point production, he didn't really do much of the game.
No, so I'm with you. I think Kings are going to win and still more to go up from here.
All righty, let's hear from Kawhi Leonard on how Russell Westbrook helped the Clippers get the victory. They're up 1-0 in this series up against the Suns.
Making winning plays, getting deflections on balls, offensive rebounding, getting us into our sets. You know, this playoff basketball, you know, you might not have your best night shooting, but you got to impact the game some type of way, and he did that tonight.
It was the prettiest 3 of 19 performance I've ever seen, just because of the way that it ended. Where he's out-rebounding the Suns. He's out-hustling DeAndre Ayton. Even when he makes the block at the end, he has the awareness to then make sure that he hits it off Devin Booker as well as he's fallen out of bounds. He made the two big free throws. Yeah, he had a disgusting-looking three down the stretch. But I look at the way that Russell Westbrook, to me, was the most impressive part of that victory. I know Kawhi was their best player, but they don't win that game after allowing the Suns to come back if it wasn't for the last few minutes of Russell Westbrook. And by the way, I know you've been a big proponent of that. If a fan says something to a player, that a player should be able to do whatever, we just will agree to disagree on that one. I think that's like the dumbest thing you've ever said. And within reason, like there's a certain line you can't cross. I don't know what the fan said the other night, but that walking to the locker room procedure, I saw a local news reporter do a stand-up. And this game was in Phoenix. I guess it's where some club is set up and it's an easier path to get to locker room and it's a much longer route if you go through where the tunnel entrance is supposed to be. But how dumb is that? To have a road player walk through that area past all those fans when you know clearly Suns fans are going to chirp the opposing team. Just a dumb setup. And it's something that should have been avoided. Now, there's certain lines you can't cross. But assuming that the fan, and it's not safe to assume that, but let's just say for this argument, didn't cross that line, it's tough to give Russ the benefit of the doubt, even in that situation, because it seems like Russ is a little sensitive going back to the Westbrook thing. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if it was just something as simple as that. And if I'm Russ, if it's something that is racist or it's something that is really vulgar, you got to just kind of walk to the locker room if it's not what I just said in that regards.
If you're the Suns, and by extension the NBA, you just cannot give the fan or Russell Westbrook an opportunity to engage. Like you said, they're, apparently, according to Brian Windhorst, this new little basically shortcut was created back when the pandemic started and when they brought the season back after the bubble
when
there's no fans. So that club was empty for that first season back. So a lot of players used it, knew it. And so, like I said, it's a shorter way to the locker room. But once you get fans back, you have to then cut that off and say, you cannot go this way because they're lucky. Again,
you're begging for problems.
Right. And nothing happened. And Russell Westbrook walked away pretty quickly from what we see in the video. It's the playoffs. If he misses a shot to lose the game and this happens in game number two, and all of a sudden you get a brouhaha.
Ooh, good one.
Malice in the Palace part. Like, it's your fault for the NBA for putting the player in the situation to get heckled and the fan to give him a chance to yell at him.
And here's the thing, and I get their fans that sit courtside, but there's one thing when you, like, jump into the stands, what happened at Malice at the Palace. Here, it's just walking past someone. They are right, like, in your personal space. It's amazing how that ended up even being allowed to happen. You're 100% right. Let's go to Jimmy Butler, who says the Bucks are still a great team without Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis suffered a back injury. The MRI is clean. I would think that he's going to play on Wednesday, but we'll have to wait and see.
You talk about an MVP caliber player and Giannis being out. It changes the dynamic of their team. But they're still a very good team. I feel as though they beat us earlier in the year without Giannis as well.
And let's hear from Coach Bud, Mike Budenholzer. This is from today, saying Giannis's injury is progressing in the right direction.
He's still sore, but I think progress. And, he's getting some treatment. And, I think we'll just continue to monitor him for the next, 24, next day or two. And I'm probably fortunate that, 2 days between games. I think still mostly positive, mostly optimistic.
And is Josh Hart officially ruled out for game two? Just wondering. I saw that it was doubtful.
Doubtful. Not officially ruled out, but does not look like he will play.
Which also, with the NBA's injury report, you could be doubtful one moment, the next thing you end up playing. We've gone through this the last 2 years in the postseason. It seems like whoever's doubtful ends up playing, and then whoever is expected to play doesn't play. But Josh Hart is doubtful. Had 17 points in game one. Jalen Brunson had 27 as well. Julius Randle, who's fighting through the injury, had 19 points and 10 rebounds. Knicks hold on 101-97. Let's hear from Tom Thibodeau, who says Julius Randle proved his toughness in game one.
That's Julius. And so I thought he had a very strong start to the game. And like I said, the rebound was huge.
By the way, I don't know how you feel about this, you being a fan of the Knicks, but I said this on Friday, and I got a little pushback. I don't think there's any pressure on the Knicks in this series. I think all the pressure is on the Cavs because they made the big move. I know that the Knicks didn't, and that's how you could argue it, but the Knicks made the big move and ended up getting Donovan Mitchell. If Mitchell can't win this series, it's a bad look for Cleveland.
I still think there's pressure on the Knicks because, again, you saw in game one with Donovan Mitchell going off. You had a chance to get him. Everyone thought you were going to get him. Whatever it was, you don't want to match the price, whatever, you couldn't get him. And now you get a glimpse of what you could have had, and you could have been moving on to round number two and maybe be a legitimate force for the Bucks if you had a player of Donovan Mitchell's caliber alongside Jalen Brunson.
I will say, though, then, if you had to argue pressure, then pressure on R.J. Barrett. R.J. Barrett's got to step up. He's got to play well because he's viewed, not that I view him ever as a number two in a championship team. I think he could be a number three in a championship team. I would look at R.J. Barrett then. You got to step up and find a way to negate some of the production of Donovan Mitchell because Brunson has been great. And Leon Rose is the only reason why Brunson is there. I know, like, Randle, he was horrible the last time they made the playoffs. He had 19 points, 10 rebounds. I think he'll be fine in this series. But when I look at an individual standpoint with the Knicks, I think there's a ton of pressure then on R.J. Barrett if you had to look at one individual with pressure on him. Your thoughts?
I would still go with Randle for two reasons. One, with how bad he was in that series against Hawks 2 years ago, and that still resonates with a lot of fans. And number two, I just don't think there's a lot expected of R.J. Barrett. Like at this point, he can't hit
water out of a boat right now.
Knicks fans are not expecting him to be this legitimate contributor, so it's not as much pressure because expectations are, frankly, so low.
Got to have a pulse, though. All right?
I'm with you, but I would still say it's, yeah. Please show a pulse. Contribute. I'm not sitting here rooting against the guy. Contribute. I want to see you be well. I want to raise expectations.
Kyle Draper will join us next at Kelp Show, CBS Sports Radio.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL plasma center and be rewarded for your generosity.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Welcome back in. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. We'll see if the Kings could take a commanding 2-0 series lead on the Golden State Warriors coming up at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Let's head out to the guest line right now. Welcome in play-by-play announcer for the Sacramento Kings. You'd also catch him pre- and post-game live at NBC Sports California. And that, of course, is Kyle Draper. Kyle, appreciate the time. How are you?
Yo, what's going on? How you doing, man? Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm doing fantastic, and we know how long the playoff drought was for the Sacramento Kings. Just to see that scene unfold on Saturday night, watch it on television, was pretty damn special, but give me the vibe out there in Sacramento.
Oh, man, it was like a movie, man. It was something that, you know, I have never seen in my years of covering basketball. You know, I've been in big playoff games. I used to work for the Celtics. TD Garden is always rocking. But this was, you know, 17 years of pent-up frustration, 17 years of anger, 17 years of jubilation came out on Saturday. And whether it was inside the arena, outside, just the whole city, you could just feel it the morning you woke up in Sacramento that this was going to be a game and a night that they'll be talking about for years to come.
I'll get to the national sentiment in just a second, but locally, heading into the year, what did Kings fans think that they had, and when did they really start to believe that this team could be special?
I think going into the beginning of the year, everyone was hoping play-in, maybe that six seed. I do believe people felt that this team could snap the streak, break the drought. But third in the West, I don't think anybody expected that. And, you know, things really changed in November when they went on that seven-game winning streak. And you got to understand, this Sacramento Kings franchise, they haven't had something like that since the Weber days, you know? And so that's what really changed people's minds and thinking about this team. And they went on the road and won at Memphis. You know, they beat Golden State. Like, you know, these are big-name franchises that the Kings handled. And my only concern back then was, could they sustain it? Could they play at this high level all season long? And they have.
Is this a group, do they get motivated by the disrespect? Do they show that when you talk to them in the locker room? Because nationally, all throughout the year, it was like, great story what Mike Brown's doing, but they're not an actual threat to get to the finals.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think it's definitely a motivator. And even in this series, you know, all you hear is talk about the Warriors going in. And I think this team has a chip on its shoulder. And I give Mike Brown a lot of credit because he came in and said, we're not just, you know, hoping to end this drought. We're trying to win a championship here in Sacramento. And that changed the thinking, the mindset of some of these players. And when you listen to them throughout the season after games, it's sort of like, you know, that chip on the shoulder in their post-game press conference. It's us against the world mentality. And you know what? We're not on national TV a lot, but we'll show them when we are on national TV, like that game earlier in the season against the Brooklyn Nets in which they dominated, hung 150 on them. I think it's, you know, they definitely are motivated by the lack of respect.
Kyle Draper here with us, and I know De'Aaron Fox has been a good player for a long time, finally made an all-star game this year, but when you get a player like that finally into the postseason, it's like, all right, the rest of the world gets to start to throw his flowers to him, and certainly could do so after that game one performance.
Yeah, it's amazing because, you know, I get to see De'Aaron every single night, and I understand how great he is, but what we saw on Saturday night was arguably the most important performance of his entire career. Think about it. First playoff game for him. First playoff game for the franchise in 17 years. You're going against the world champ, Steph Curry, you know, maybe a top 10 player of all time. And on that night, De'Aaron Fox was the best player on the floor. And when it came winning time, clutch situations, fourth quarter, De'Aaron Fox outscored Steph Curry 15-13 in that fourth. He stood toe-to-toe. Remember, Curry had that big three in the corner. Fox tracked him down, was right there with him, and that looked like it would be a dagger three that would just break the Kings' hearts. And with this Fox do, he comes right back down and hits a three of his own. And remember, he's not known for his outside shooting. He's not known for his three-point shot. But in that moment, the biggest for the Kings in 17 years, he delivered.
Kyle Draper, we make a lot about experience, and I know it's only one game, and this series is far from being over, but with the Warriors having that experience, the Kings not really having it, how big of a factor is that, do you think, in this series?
You know, going into game one, I thought it would be a big factor. I thought, especially in a close game, the Warriors know who they are and know what they want to do. They've been there before, But the Kings showed me something in game one. You know, first of all, they didn't get rattled early. You would think your first playoff appearance, you would come out slow and get kind of rattled. They got down by 10, but they never gave up. But then in the fourth, to make the plays down the stretch. And so experience is a factor, but let's just talk about talent and how good this team is. Remember, this Sacramento Kings team did not back into the playoffs. They didn't get hot at the right time. They've been better than the Warriors all season long, and I think that's something they're hanging their hat on. And so while the Warriors may have the experience, I think the Kings have the belief that they belong and they could beat this team.
We know the Warriors have been god-awful all throughout the year on the road. Down 0-1, we talk about that experience. What type of effort, what type of game do you think we're going to see tonight out of Golden State?
Hey, they got to be desperate, right? I mean, you know, they're 30-10, I think, with this group. You know, Draymond, Steph, and Klay after losing a game in the postseason. And so I just think you'll see a desperate Warriors team out there. You know, as important as game one is, if I'm Sacramento, you haven't done anything yet. This is the most important game of the series because we know the numbers and the statistics when the team goes up 2-0. And so you mentioned the Warriors struggle on the road. If they could somehow get this game, then they rustle away home court advantage and then they're starting to feel good about themselves. And so I think this is just going to be a dogfight again. I think, you know, I thought game one was hugely important for Sacramento, and I think this game is important equally for both teams.
What do you think we'll see from Sabonis tonight?
You know, it's interesting because you're talking about an all-star, a three-time all-star, who really is the engine for the Kings' offense. You know, he facilitates a lot, but yet in game number one, he only had 2 assists, which is shocking to me. This guy is, you know, especially over the last month or so, he's been flirting around triple doubles every single night. And he'll be the first to tell you he missed a lot of shots that he probably normally makes. He was 5 of 17 in game one. But Sabonis has never been the guy that comes out and gets you 30 or anything like that. I expect a 20-14 rebound and like an 8 or 9 assist kind of game flirting with that triple double, but a more efficient game too. There's no way this guy who shoots better than 60% from the field should be 5 of 17. Give the Warriors some credit, obviously, but I think it'll be a big bounce-back game. I'm not expecting a 40-20 or anything like that, but more like his regular season numbers, maybe even a bump up, 23 and about 14 with 7 or 8 assists.
Wrap it up with Kyle Draper. Does a great job covering the Kings play-by-play, pre and post as well. When I look at Malik Monk, I was a big fan of him coming out of Kentucky. Didn't make any sense to me why he went 11th overall. I know he's not had the career that a lot of us have expected, but to see him get 32 in that game one and being around him night in and night out, what stood out to you the most about that performance?
Just his aggressiveness, man. And I thought, you know, when you look at Malik Monk and when you look at Jordan Poole, to me, those are the two X factors for the team. Whoever wins that matchup, I think, will win the game. And in game one, it was Malik Monk. But he brings sort of a swagger and edge to the Sacramento Kings team. And you could argue he's the heart and soul of this team. And I just, you know, it's amazing that, you know, him and Fox in their first ever playoff game combining for 70 points. You know, when you look at this Kings team, I think Malik Monk is sort of the litmus test. We can tell how this team is playing if Malik Monk is going. And so what does he do to back it up, right? I mean, you know, he's a sixth man, obviously, scored 32 in game one. He can't come out and have a pedestrian 8 points, 10 points. He has to play at a high level, I think, for the Kings to win.
I know what you said earlier in the conversation, Kyle Draper, that going into the year you thought maybe a sixth seed, play-in tournament was probably more of the goal. When you go back to when Mike Brown was hired, I'm sure a lot of people weren't thrilled about it because it's a retread. We know how long he's been around this league and what he's done. But what was your reaction initially when they hired Coach Brown?
You know, I was kind of indifferent. I thought, great, you know, it's a good hire. You know, when you look at, you know, who he's coached in the past, he's coached all the game's greatest players. You know, when he was in Cleveland, he was obviously young. And I think, you know, his time with the Warriors really helped him out. And so I, you know, I was okay with the hire, but then when you talk to him and when you see him in action and when you see how he connects with the players and how enthusiastic he is and how, you know, he builds people up. I was talking to an assistant coach, with, one of the squads, other team earlier this season. And he said, one thing about Mike Brown is, whether you're guy number one or guy number 13, he's going to touch you. He's going to make you feel important. He's going to make you feel a part of this. He's going to inspire you. And that's what he's been able to do, man. And so, you know, a lot of teams are hiring young guys, you know, young assistant coaches as head coaches. Mike Brown's a veteran who's been around. And I think he was perfect for this team because they needed somebody that came in with a sort of resume, a cachet to really touch these guys.
I mean, that's play-by-play for the Kings, also host of Kings pre- and post-game live at NBC Sports California. He, of course, is Kyle Draper. Kyle, enjoy the environment. Enjoy the game coming up later tonight. Thank you for doing this.
All right, my man. Thanks for having me on.
Weddings are the celebration of all the details that make a couple perfect for each other. And you can find your perfect fit, too, at Indochino. Choose every detail of a custom-tailored suit, from lapels to linings and more, starting at just $4.99. My bad.
Shh. Sorry.
Find the suit that's perfect for you. Go to Indochino.com and use code PODCAST for 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's 10% off $399 or more at Indochino.com. Code PODCAST.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Very fitting you play that hickey because you said F that guy in Russell Westbrook, and then the next thing you know, Russell Westbrook goes out and has a dominant game one performance. Nothing like a 3-19 from the field, dominant performance, but the Hickey Hex is still alive and well because he made several crucial hustle plays down the stretch. And not only that, made two big free throws at the end. So your guy, that bleeping guy, or clown, or whatever you called him, Russell Westbrook, stepping up big. There's actually some people that tell me you were actually the guy that was in that locker room or in the fan area that was cursing at Russell Westbrook that may have set him off the other night.
Well, you know, what can I say? I get other teams and fan bases fired up. That's my job here. So, Clippers fans, you're welcome. Championship coming your way. Led by Finals MVP, Russell Westbrook.
Oh, geez. Who's more sensitive, Westbrook or Hickey? 855-212-4CBS.
I don't fight anybody for people coming at me making fun of, allegedly, some takes that I would have that were wrong.
What's this right here?
I'm not fighting you. I'm not going out of my way to confront you and pull my shirt up to show you my six-pack and get my hands in a ball ready to fight.
You have showed us your six-pack, though, here in the studio before, after some people were doubting you for your lack of push-up skills, and then you did, what, 40?
41, right in their head.
41 push-ups over the summer.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. The goal is 25 and shatter that.
I will say I've noticed a new trend, though, on Twitter by you. A very new trend.
A new trend on Twitter by me. Okay, let's hear it.
Whenever you do get a prediction right, you go back and quote tweet or your old segment, and you go, folks, I always get things wrong. Here's where I got something right. I've noticed that a few times as of late. Like, it doesn't happen often, but I've noticed it like three or four times.
A few times of late, which means we're getting some things right.
Well, not like massive predictions.
I would say I am consistent because I'm also equally as likely to go back to predictions I had that were wrong and quote to them, make fun of myself. So I think it's fair game, and I think I do equally both making fun of myself and maybe patting myself on the back a little bit. I would say I don't do one more than the other.
Can I just give you a little piece of advice?
Sure.
I would think when you're wrong, you always do it. Or you do it more times than not. I think when you're right, it has to be such an outrageous prediction or something that's like, wow, that was so cool that he predicted in order to do that. And so far, it's not really moved the needle of me saying, wow, Hickey said something that was that impressive. I think it's got to be something from like a few years ago that you end up being right on.
Oh, like the Rams winning the Super Bowl.
You said that before the season, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's fair game.
Okay. Which I did not go back and quote tweet, I don't think. Maybe I did. I don't remember.
You definitely
did. Maybe I did.
Come on, you can't help yourself.
I can't say that with certainty. There's maybe a chance that I let my humbleness settle in and just let that one go.
Well, do you think you owe Russell Westbrook an apology?
After one game, no. Now, if he plays like this five more times and the Clippers win three more games and he is a true catalyst towards winning and not a hindrance, I will offer Russell Westbrook an apology. I will give the Clippers an apology as well for doubting their, I thought at the time, stupidity, frankly, in going after Russell Westbrook and then starting him right from the jump. So, yes, I would give them an apology if they beat the Suns.
Okay. Would you agree with this statement? The two teams, one from each conference, that are under the most pressure to get to the NBA Finals this year. In the Western Conference, it's the Suns. In the Eastern Conference, it's the Boston Celtics. Would you agree with that? But first, you can think of Riley Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. This is where you got to answer the question.
The Suns, 100%. The East is really tough, I will say, in terms of pressure, just because the Bucks won a championship 2 years ago. So I still think you can live with that, where there's not a ton of pressure to get to the title this year. The Celtics, we just saw, were in the finals. Like, I want to answer the Sixers.
But isn't that the team that you said is under the most pressure?
It's one of those things where, for me, the pressure was to get to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Which is a low bar.
Saying it's not. But I think, but that's also, I don't think they have any chance of getting there. And that's part of the reason why if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals and get swept by the Bucks, I would still consider Philly a success.
Oh, that season, a success. No.
They've never gotten there before.
No, you can't get swept.
They cannot beat the Celtics in the postseason. If you just get past Boston, for me, that's a success. I don't care what happens after that.
If you get past Boston, you better find a way to get to the NBA Finals. Now, I don't think either are going to happen because you're basically seeing it tonight. James Harden was unconscious in game number one and then in game number two so far. And this at the halftime, Nets 49, Sixers 44. James Harden, though, in the first half of game number two, 1-7 from the field, 0-4 from three, and only has 2 points. Playoff James Harden is now back. What we saw in game one, and it really doesn't matter because it's going up against the Nets, so it means nothing. You're not going to get any praise in this series. You could only get criticism because you're expected to win this series in 4 games, 5 games at most. But this just shows you what your greatest fear is with the Sixers is the construction of this team where you know Embiid is great. You know Embiid is probably going to be, and I do think he will be, the MVP of the league. But James Harden, there's no way in having any confidence in his playoff pass just because of the fact that his most memorable moment in the postseason, and take it outside of OKC because he's a totally different player since leaving OKC, has been that block that he had, ironically, up against the Oklahoma City Thunder in a series that should have never gone to Game 7 but did go to Game 7. There's so many moments where James Harden just has been, basically, fans have been putting his face on a milk carton and he's been missing in a big spot that makes you think, even though he is a great player and he'll be a Hall of Famer one day easily, that when it comes to the postseason, there's just some guys that aren't built to dominate in those moments, and I think James Harden is definitely one of those players.
When you add that with Doc Rivers' inability to coach at a high level in the postseason, it's why I don't have a lot of faith in the Sixers. We just want to go back to your initial question. I've settled on an answer. After talking about it out loud in circles, I'll go the Bucks. Pressure on the Bucks, get to the finals, in part because of the path.
It's the Celtics.
Celtics just got there. The Bucks have the Heat.
But the Celtics
Knicks,
haven't won
Cavs,
it.
And you got a healthy Chris Middleton, which you did not have last year. Got to get there.
Celtics haven't won it, though, with this group. And they've been close. They've been to a bunch of conference finals. Like you said, they were in the finals last year. This is not a strong year for the NBA. Like, I only think there's 5 teams that could win a championship. And that's in the Western Conference, the Suns, and the Nuggets. I don't think the Warriors are going to win it this year, but you still give them the benefit of the doubt until you see Steve Kerr losing a Western Conference playoff series because he's never done so as a coach in his career. And in the East, I don't even think the Sixers can get there. I think it's either the Bucks or the Celtics. And also, even though I think he will play in game number two, and you look at the back injury for Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I know Middleton did play the other night and played well, but he's dealing with his leg injury as well. If the Bucks don't get there, there's probably some injury excuse to be had. As long as Jaylen Brown stops planting, I think he will be fine. And you have Tatum and Brown who've never been there. That's why, or they never won a championship together. That's why I think there's more pressure on the Celtics than the Milwaukee Bucks.
I'm still going to go with the Bucks. Home court advantage here. Again, I think Giannis is going to be back. You have Chris Middleton on your side. And also, too, now this is a chance for the Bucks. You got one under your belt, but now, it's how, windows in the NBA close fast. How many can you get? before Giannis starts to get older, before this group starts to age out. You want to start sacking championships. This is a great opportunity to do so.
Did you see this Jaylen Brown story, by the way?
He was gardening.
Yeah, he injured his hand and he needed stitches. I was reading this on SI the other day after a plant watering accident.
Yes.
When you're at that level of being rich, you're watering your own plants?
Well, it sounds like a hobby for him.
Don't you have someone take care of that, though, for you?
Well, he likes it. You're not going to do something and have someone take care of something you like
okay,
to do.
Fine.
Being a little more careful, maybe.
I don't buy. You buy this story?
Put some gloves on.
You buy this story?
I
think there has to be something more. Who injures their hand watering plants?
The reason why I agree,
when he cut himself in the faucet,
is
when he's
because
turning on,
it's so ridiculous. Like, let's just say, let's say what he was drunk. Let's say he had a wine bottle cut his hand, like something
I don't
like that.
Know.
Like,
yeah.
If he was doing something that maybe doesn't sound the best, and he cut his hand, if you're going to then think of an excuse as to what happens, I mean,
maybe the team gave him the excuse.
But if you're thinking of excuses. Like watering your plants?
It's so bizarre. Therefore, even though I don't believe it, some people may believe it.
Drop a plate on, I don't know, like. You know, if that's the case, and the Celtics pulled this idea out of thin air to fool gullible people like myself into believing this is the truth, they got me. I'm believing it. I don't know if it's true or not, but they definitely got me.
And he claimed that he cut his right hand picking up a glass vase when he knocked over while watering his plants last night and got 5 stitches, and he said he was expected to be ready for the playoffs. That was from April 7th from Jared Weiss. I don't know. That is so not believable. I'm sorry. Yeah, I cut myself watering plants. Okay. And you know what? The dog ate my homework. That's also where I'm going to go on that one. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll do a little onside, offside. When we come on back, still to come in the final hour of the show, we will get to the Texas quarterback battle that's really no longer a battle. And we also have some NFL stories as well pertaining to Budda Baker requesting a trade, Brock Purdy talking about maybe he's not going to be back this year, and then also our pal Bryant McFadden. I'm really proud of him because he's did something that I've never seen done before in the media. And it could be a new trend. We'll get into all that coming up in the final 60 minutes of the Zach Gelb Show on a very busy Monday. Playoff pucks, playoff hoops.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL Plasma Center and be rewarded for your generosity.